The Clash on USB, the call up. I'm Bill Senekiewicz, getting on out of here. Mike, Juhas, and Eric Cawley have invaded CR1 and are all set to give us Radio Free Long Island.
What the hell is that?
Bill, it's 12 o'clock. You're on our time now.
Okay.
No, we're on Radio Free Long Island.
Why do you always bother me when I'm being nice to you guys, introducing you? And
yeah, we can introduce ourselves. We're grown up now.
Oh, come on. Give the man credit for doing us a favor.
All right.
All right. I'm getting out of here. Here's Stardate.
Stardate, April the 11th. The Bear Watcher. Stay with us. Stardate is made possible through funding by the undergraduate students of the State University at Stony Brook. It can be heard every night at midnight and every afternoon at 5:58 on WUSB, Stony Brook. Stardate for April the 11th. Yesterday we told you how to follow the arc to find the orange star Arcturus. In other words, you can find this star by drawing an imaginary line out from the curved handle of the Big Dipper. Once you've found Arcturus, it's fairly easy to see the rest of its constellation, Bootes. The constellation Bootes has the shape of a kite, with Arcturus marking the spot where you'd attach a tail. You'll find Bootes this month in the eastern sky each evening. The ancient Greek stargazers didn't have kites, so they chose another identity for this constellation. Remember, it has a visual connection to the Big Dipper, which is in the constellation Ursa Major, or the Great Bear. The Greeks called Bootes the herdsman. According to legend, the herdsman was placed in the sky to watch over the great and small bears, to us, the Big and Little Dippers. These star figures deserve watching, since they were used by sailors to find their positions at sea. The name for the bright star Arcturus comes from two Greek words that mean bear watcher. Not only the Greeks, the Egyptians also believed that Bootes guarded the Great Bear. In Egyptian mythology, far northern stars like those in the Bear were evil, with the Bear itself the worst of all. Because they're so near the north pole of the sky, these stars never set below the horizon. To keep a constant watch over them, the Egyptians identified Bootes not as a herdsman, but as a giant hippopotamus. Stardate is produced for the University of Texas McDonald Observatory. We're in Austin, Texas, and our zip is 78712. Thanks for being with me. I'm Joel Block.
Blind Date, April 10th. Watching the Bears. Today we're talking about nudism. All around the many nudist resorts and beaches exists the voyeur. You can see him on a clear day. He's the older, heavy-set man in a t-shirt and a pair of Bermuda shorts with a pair of binoculars and three legs. Voyeur Borealis, as he's known in Pig Latin, participates in Watching the Bears, spelled B-A-R-E-S. He's the type of fellow who'd run up to a nude woman and ask, "Say, can I be your fig leaf?" Well, there's this old nudist credo, if it's not yours, don't touch it, that our voyeur doesn't know about. That's the kind of behavior that's bound to get our man in big, big trouble. That's our blind date for today. It's a production of the Burger King Observatory at the University of New York at Stony Brook, zip 11794. Our program was written by Deborah Canary. Thanks for your company. I'm Joel Block.
Wait a minute. That could not be Joel Block. How could that be Joel Block? We already had a Joel Block. Something's going wrong here. Something's terribly wrong, but we're going to figure out what it is. Welcome to Radio Free Long Island. You never know what's going to happen on this show.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
10.
Ground control
9,
to Major Tom.
8. 7. 6. 5. 4.
Attention, attention. The space shuttle will be lifting off in T-minus 10 minutes. Please stay out of the restricted area so that everything will go smoothly. Thank you. Well, Bob, what do you think?
Well, I don't know, Steve. We've gotten this far 23 times before. And it's really unbelievable how things keep getting fouled up.
Yeah, I know. But we triple-checked everything this time, and believe you me, there's no way in the name of Pete Conrad that anything's going to go wrong this time.
Yeah, but Steve, look at the facts. I mean, there's only two of us working here at Cape Carnival in the first place. And we're supposed to do everything, and we're only getting paid $2 an hour.
$2.10, Bob.
You get $2.10?
Yeah, I thought you did, too.
No, they're paying me $2.
Oh, well, maybe they're paying me extra for being the announcer.
Yeah, it could be. Well, anyway, we're the only ones left after all the budget cuts, and the only thing we're going to give the astronauts is the assurance that we won't charge them rent for being up there.
That's true. But you're being too pessimistic, Bob. I mean, it's the spirit that counts, isn't it? And we've got that, all right. I know I'll be the happiest man in the world when I see that space shuttle orbiting over New York City.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. The shuttle's not going to be orbiting over New York.
It sure is, Bob. You see that little instrument of mine over there? That's guiding the shuttle to 40 degrees north.
But wait a minute. Well, my instrument over there is guiding it to 40 degrees south.
Oh, my God. We're going to rip the thing in half. Oh, boy. Attention. The space shuttle takeoff is being postponed again. We will keep you informed of any developments. My God, we're never going to get out of here.
Thank you. think of Jean-Michel Jarre.
Equinox.
That's what it is.
That's what it's called. Part 5, 6, 7, and 8 all mixed in there together.
Is that it?
That's what they call it. That's what's printed on the album. I guess you just never figured out any titles for those songs.
Well, we only got up to 5 and 6 so far.
Yeah. Pretty good parts, if you ask me.
I think so. I like them. In fact, I was going to play them on my regular show Monday night.
Well, now you can't, because
we have
a policy here at the radio station where you can't play things twice in a week.
Well, I'm just going to have to turn your microphone off then.
No, you wouldn't do that. I mean, it's not fair. Freedom of speech and all that.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, did you get up early this morning to watch the space shuttle take off and then be disappointed?
No.
But you were going to, weren't you?
I was going to.
Yeah, what happened?
I was out late last night.
So was I.
And I didn't get home until, I guess, about 2 o'clock a.m.
Yeah.
And I got up at my regular time, about 7:30 or so.
I got home closer to 4, and I got up at my regular time, which is about 12.
Noon?
Yeah, well, I was thinking of staying up all night long to watch it. But I'm glad I didn't, because I would have been talking about half the speed I'm talking at now if I had done that.
About half the speed?
And I would have been pretty upset, too, at seeing it not take off.
Right.
Have you ever seen one take off live?
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever done that, because they always do it at the most ungodly hours, 6 o'clock. Who would, in their right mind, would want to leave Earth at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Just imagine if you are a former astronaut, such as Pete Conrad, living in California.
Yeah.
You imagine he'd have to get up at 4 o'clock to watch the thing go and stuff.
That's right. No, California is
3 hours.
3 hours, so they have to get up at 3 o'clock, or just have a late night out.
No, it wasn't supposed to get launched until
6:50, is that right? But they begin their coverage at 6 o'clock, and you don't want to miss any of that.
6:30. So, figure, yeah, that's true. But what I had planned to do anyway was just, like, videotape it. So I'll do that on Sunday.
Oh, you have one of those neato videotape machines?
Yeah, but don't tell anybody.
Okay, no one will know. Well, I'm disappointed that it didn't get off the ground. I didn't mean to say it that way, but it's funny that I did. Do you think it's going to come off on Sunday?
Yeah.
I hope so. It's been long enough. That thing was supposed to go up in, what, the late 70s? Mid-70s?
No. It's only two years late.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
That's not too bad, but still, it's had its share of bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
A big share of bad luck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll give it that. Just hope they fasten down the tiles with scotch tape hard enough.
Simple things like that. They just have to remember the basics.
Yeah.
Ask the guys who did the Apollo missions. They did a pretty good job.
Yeah. We're proud of them.
Listen, do you want to buy a ticket on the space shuttle? Why don't we start something tonight?
What?
Where people out there who want to send us somewhere can buy us a ticket to the space shuttle.
Okay.
We'll be well out of your reach. We won't be damaging the airwaves anymore Friday nights. And we won't even be on the planet. That'll be something.
Yeah.
So let's start it now. Send Mike and Eric to space.
Do I get to bring a woman along with me?
Well, that's up to the person donating the money.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we haven't introduced ourselves.
Oh, I'm Mike.
Oh, I'm Eric. And this is Radio Free Long Island.
Mike Juhas and
Eric Corley.
To be official.
On WUSB Stony Brook.
At 12:18 a.m.
In the morning.
Where it's 52 degrees.
And what's that Celsius, Mike?
That's...
Think hard. Calculation, 9/5 over C or something like that.
11 degrees.
11 degrees Celsius. Commendable.
Am I right?
Yes, he is right, I think. I can't see the conversion scale from over here, so
well,
I don't know.
It says 11,
I have to be right. Whoever wrote that must be right.
I shouldn't have said. What would a giveaway?
Well, the topic is space tonight, folks. We're going to be doing all sorts of spacey things.
Space is the place.
We're going to be talking to a space person.
Deborah Bird.
Deborah Bird. You know who Deborah Bird is?
I do.
Who's Deborah Bird?
She writes Stardate.
She writes Stardate, which is heard every night at midnight and every afternoon at 5:58
p.m.
Right. And anyone who's heard Stardate knows what kind of a program it is. It deals with the stars, with the planets and everything, and... It's fascinating. I like that program a lot. I've been listening to it for about a year now. I've learned a lot of things.
That's because you have no choice.
That's true, I don't, but it's one of the good things I've gotten out of it.
I have a friend of mine who has a brother who lives in Colorado.
Colorado,
and,
huh?
And listens to that? Stardate on KVNF.
I don't think you can say KVNF on WUSB.
You mean I can't say KVNF, the voice of the North Fork?
No, North Fork. They don't have a North Fork in Colorado.
Yeah,
we
yeah,
have
they,
one in Long Island. We don't.
They do. I don't know what the. I don't know
a
what.
Fork
it,
of what?
They
don't even have water out there.
I don't know. Yes, oh. they do. What, haven't you ever heard of the Colorado River?
Well, yeah, but how can you have a fork over the river is what forks, not the land.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, then you have to name the towns that are in the river North Fork, things like that, because we name the land North Fork.
Well, what would
because
the fishes
the land is
say?
I don't know what fishes say. Are we going to discuss that again?
Sure. Oh, boy.
Well, why don't we talk to Deborah Bird?
Can we talk to Deborah Bird?
All right, let's have a little bit more music. We'll contact Deborah Bird on the telephone, and we'll bring it to you as soon as we can. It's 12:23 in the morning, and we have Deborah Bird on the phone line. She's talking to us from Austin, Texas, and Deborah Bird is, of course, the writer of Stardate, a program that's heard every night at midnight here in USB. And, Deborah, the first thing I'd like to ask you is, what do you think of our nation's space program at the present time?
Oh, well, for one thing, I'm really happy about it. I'm tremendously pleased. It's been a long wait, and everything looks great. And, you know, I just couldn't be happier. I'm sure that my feelings are shared by almost everyone in the country.
It has been a long time since the Apollo missions, a good, 6 or 7 years, since we sent the man up into space. And do you think this is going to lead to more expeditions, say, to Mars and other planets, maybe the moon again?
Well, there aren't any manned missions in the works at the moment, other than the shuttle. Like, there are no missions to Mars planned or anything like that, but it's definitely my feeling that man will be going into space, and as the years pass, I think that people will realize more and more that space is out there for us to go into, and when that happens, I think that those kinds of things will definitely take place. You know, at the moment, it really seems as though the space program is suffering from some kind of it's in a slump for sure. Like, the amount of money that NASA gets seems to get smaller and smaller. And to my way of thinking, that's really sad. But I can't help but think that won't last forever because, space is...
Space is the place.
Yeah, space is the place. That's right. It's out there. It's a new frontier, and everyone kind of feels that in their gut now, I think. It's evidenced by Star Wars and by Stardate itself, by the popularity of Stardate.
How did you get started with Stardate?
Well, Stardate actually started as a telephone service, believe it or not. So someone got the idea that it would be neat if the people in Austin, which is where we are, could call on the telephone and hear a little message on astronomy. And that was about 5 years ago, I guess. So a local radio station, KLBJ, here in Austin, the program director from there began calling us, and he liked the messages, and he said, well, let's put them on the radio and see how it works. So we did that for a while, and it proved to be, you know, a popular program. And we decided to try to syndicate it. So now Stardate is heard on a number of radio stations around the country, and we're happy with it. We're really happy with the way things are going, but I think that what, you know, the reason things are going so well is because of our subject matter, the subject of astronomy and space. It's really, people love astronomy. It's really a subject that people can relate to.
Were you involved with it from day one?
Oh, yeah. I wrote those first telephone messages, and I'm still writing it. I've always been the only writer.
Is it very hard to come up with topics, or is it just so much out there that you never run out?
Well, I really, it's, astronomy is in a golden age now. For example, when we first started the program, I can look back at the scripts that I first wrote, and I said things like, you know, Saturn has three rings called the A, B, and C rings. And I mean, now, you know, for Saturn, that's just ancient history. Now Saturn is known to have hundreds of rings. You know, our spacecraft has been by Saturn, and that's true in almost everything in astronomy. It's changing so fast. So in terms of topics, it's just such a, you know, there's so much happening in astronomy that I can't even conceive of running out of topics. And then, of course, there's the sky. You know, the sky is up there for everyone, and it's got, all different things are happening in the sky all the time, and so that's ever-changing, too. So in terms of topics, you know, I'm never at a loss for topics. It's amazing.
About how many radio stations is your Stardate heard on?
I think at last count it was something like 114.
Boy.
But that's, our situation has changed since last year because we, you know, up until January 4th of this year, we were funded by the National Science Foundation, and we were able to give the program away free to radio stations. Well, now stations have to pay for it, and when we were giving it away free, we had more like 1,000 radio stations, and, you know, a lot of people heard Stardate, and that was great.
Is that a result of federal budget cuts that you have to charge for it now?
Yes and no. The National Science Foundation makes it a policy not to give grants for more than 1 year.
Oh.
So they had already given us 2 years' worth of grants, and we didn't even apply for another grant this year. But strangely enough, they called us up and said, hey, thank you guys are, you know, when we did manage to stay on the air after January 4th, they called us up and said, hey, we want to give you guys some more money. And then a week later, they called us back and said, well, because of the budget cuts, forget it. We're not going to give you any more money.
Now, these budget cuts, as long as we're on the subject, they don't seem to indicate a sort of negative attitude towards science and the space program. Do you think that with the space shuttle and everything, you think we can survive that and perhaps do more things in the future?
Well, it's a complicated question, even in my mind, because it seems as though the Reagan administration is really pushing the military. You know, they seem to be willing to give money to the military, and my understanding is that the shuttle is going to be used by the military. And it's, you know, so as to how much money is going to actually be going into the space program, it's confusing to me, at least, because, you know, you can't, it's I guess it's going to be determined by how much the military does begin going into space.
Well, you know, it's interesting, now we're on the topic of the military. I read an article two Sundays ago in the New York Times that mentioned that the launching of the space shuttle would start a whole new series of military ventures. In other words, the space shuttle could be used for military purposes. Have you ever heard anything like that? And if so, what do you think about it?
Oh, yeah, I've definitely heard it. It's definitely true that for example, I've heard that the Russians are also developing a shuttle. And theirs is slightly different from ours because it's my understanding that theirs can take off from a runway as well as land on a runway as our shuttle can do. And, of course, that's, you know, a distinct military advantage because if our launch site gets blown up, for example, the shuttle couldn't take off, you know.
True.
Whereas the Russian shuttle could take off from any runway, so they're in much better shape from a military standpoint.
I think they were referring, though, to dropping bombs from a shuttle or just looking at what they're doing and things like that. And it's kind of ironic, I guess, because if they look at it from that point of view, it may get more funding.
Right. Well, it's sad in a way that the space program maybe is going to have to depend on the military to survive. But I think people are going to realize, as we do go into space more, that war is really obsolete nowadays. Global war at any rate. I mean, we can blow ourselves to pieces, but where is that going to lead us? And I think that, you know, in our hearts, we all kind of realize that, and that the politicians, surely they realize that too. So it's almost as though it's a game, and, you know, hopefully, nothing will happen, in terms of global warfare. But meanwhile, money, military dollars, I guess, are being spent on space, and I'm in favor of the space program, wholeheartedly in favor of it, and I hope we can get into space. And if it has to be with military dollars, that's okay with me.
I read somewhere that out of all the bookings for the space shuttle, the Defense Department has top priority. If they had a special project, they'd bump private industry right off the shuttle.
Right, yeah. I think I've heard that too.
Interesting.
It's, like I say, it's sad in a way that we have to use military dollars to get into space, but...
we'll take what we can get.
Right, yeah, that's how I feel about it.
Now, you say that you feel war is obsolete, but when we get out into space and start colonizing and everything, do you think the whole damn thing's just going to start over again? Do you think we'll have wars in space instead of wars on Earth?
Well, yeah, I think we probably will, as a matter of fact. I don't think that humans are going to become different creatures just because we go into space. I think a lot of things could improve if we would go into space, on timescales of, say, 100 years. And even right now, I think that things would improve if our attitude was that we were going to go into space. But I think humans are humans, and war has been a part of, our situation ever since humans have been on the planet. And probably if we go into space, it'll be a part of the situation there, too.
Do you think we'll ever outgrow it?
I don't actually foresee a time that we will, because when I think about the future, it's really hard for me to think any farther ahead than, say, 100 years ahead. I can't really imagine what it would be like 1,000 years from now.
Well, who could imagine 1,000 years before now what it would be like today?
Who could even 100 years
100 years ago, too.
Imagine what it would be like today.
I always...
Those people were out there riding horseback. it was really different. We didn't have airplanes.
I always say I can't see past the end of my nose, but I don't like talking all about this war. I like to talk about the peaceful aspects of space travel and that kind of thing.
Well, one thing about, war and military uses of space and that kind of thing, it seems as though wars stem from conflicts over resources and conflicts over land and that kind of thing. And one thing that space has going for it is that it has a lot of resources and a lot of space. There's a lot of room out there. And moreover, there's almost unlimited energy, because when we get into space, we can gather energy from the sun much more efficiently than we can do from the surface of the Earth. So, hopefully the kinds of political conflicts and things that go on here on the surface of the planet won't have so much reason to go on in space, because there'll be plenty for everybody. There are resources up there that we can't even imagine. So, I think that human aggression is a pretty basic part of our nature, but on the other hand, there is hope, because there's so much that space has to offer.
Well, Deborah, since you deal so much with astronomy, you must every now and then come up with the topic of extraterrestrial life, and I was wondering if you had any theories on it yourself, if there's anything you think is out there.
Well, I don't know if there's anything out there or not, but I hope there is. I think it would be just incredibly wonderful to find out that there were other beings out there. And, there are, you hear a lot of astronomers, professional astronomers, say things like, well, if these UFOs are real, then why don't they come around observatories where there are people who know about the sky and know what's in the sky? You know, it seems as though the people who have UFO experiences and things like that are people who really don't know much about the sky and who, you know, it turns out that the thing they saw was Venus or something, you know.
Well, that is strange, but then again, you have some sort of a conception of how big the universe is or how infinite it is. How could there not be life is perhaps a better question.
That's how I feel. John Wheeler, who is a physicist at the University of Texas, and who's, you know, who has done incredible things in physics, he's the person who coined the phrase black hole, for example. And he had a really wonderful thing to say about human consciousness. And his idea is that the universe came into being in order that consciousness might exist. In other words, you know, he pictures human consciousness or consciousness in general as being like the flower at the end of the plant, so that it's, you know, it's where it's all at. In other words, I mean, it's just like, you know, the universe evolves and it evolves consciousness. And I think that's a really neat idea, and I think it's makes sense to me. I mean, I don't know if it's right or not, but it sure seems like there's an awful lot of stars out there, and we don't know if there are planets, you know, orbiting any of those stars. We haven't discovered planets orbiting any of the other stars in the galaxy. We haven't proven that there are any planets those in our solar system.
Do we have the capacity to see if there are planets?
Well, we couldn't see them. It's possible that when the space telescope goes up, which is going to be around the mid-1980s, that's one of the things the shuttle is going to do. It's going to take up a 90-inch telescope and place it in orbit around the Earth. And when that telescope goes into orbit, it's possible that we will be able to actually see planets orbiting some of the nearby stars. But at the moment, the stars are so bright and they're all so far away that our telescopes just can't see planets. We don't, you know, we just don't know if they're there. And there are ways of finding that there's evidence for planets, but the evidence is indirect, and so we still haven't proven that there are any other planets. But, you know, it makes sense to me that there are planets, because, after all, you know, our planet orbits a star, and there are other planets orbiting around our star, and it seems the theories of how this solar system evolved, you know, seem to indicate that other solar systems could also evolve in the same way, and that, in fact, other solar systems are common. And it seems as though, you know, if there are other solar systems, it certainly seems as though there should be life somewhere else.
But you mentioned the telescope in space, and I was just wondering, hasn't anybody ever brought a telescope with them on one of the missions before to take a look at with more clear conditions?
I think that in Skylab there was a solar telescope. I know they did a lot of work on the sun. I don't know. I don't know for sure.
Well, not a 90-inch telescope.
Not a 90-inch telescope, that's for sure.
Now, when they bring this thing up, it will be orbiting all by itself? It won't be in another vehicle of some sort?
Well, the shuttle is going to carry it up. It'll fit into the cargo bay of the shuttle, and the astronauts will set it up, you know, in space. And, you know, I think the idea is that periodically shuttle astronauts will go up there and maintain the telescope. But once it gets up there, it'll be, you know, just by itself orbiting. It looks like just a, you know, when you see pictures of it, it looks like just a tube, just like any other telescope looks like. And it has these wings kind of coming out from it, and the wings are solar panels to collect solar energy. So, you know, it'll just be a telescope just kind of floating around up there in space.
But with an amazing view. I guess they can look down on Earth, too, with that telescope.
Well, yeah, that's true. I never thought of that. But, you know, we kind of know what's on the Earth because there are satellites up there now, for example, Landsat, which is, you know, circling the Earth and taking pictures of the Earth and, you know, finding things out about crop conditions and weather patterns and all these different things on the Earth. The amazing thing about the space telescope is that we'll be able to see unreal things that we've never been able to see before. For example, the planet Uranus in the past few years has been discovered to have rings. Similar to the rings of Saturn, but we can't see those rings from Earth because they're very small and thin, but the space telescope will be able to see them, And another big question in astronomy today is the question of moons for asteroids.
You were dealing with that topic a few weeks back, I believe.
Right, yeah. It's a really controversial topic in astronomy nowadays. You know, you think of asteroids, there are these boulders that are just orbiting around the sun, and now people are saying that some of the asteroids may have moons. In other words, some of them may be double.
Well, if it's possible for asteroids to have moons, wouldn't it be possible for moons to have moons?
No, moons would have asteroids.
Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I think that's a semantic question. the question of asteroid moons, it's a little, it's really double asteroids is what you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
Because, of course, the Earth and moon system, you know, we think of the moon as going around the Earth. Well, actually what the situation is that the Earth and moon are double worlds. They're double planets. You know, they orbit a common center of gravity, and it turns out that that common center of gravity is inside the Earth, but it's not in the center of the Earth. It's not that the moon goes around the Earth. It's that the Earth and moon, you know, orbit a common center of gravity.
Would you say the same thing of the Earth and the sun?
Yeah, I think it's true for the Earth and the sun, too, but, of course, in the case of the Earth and the sun, the common center of gravity would be so much closer to the center of the sun, because the sun is so much more massive than the Earth that you would practically consider that the Earth does just orbit the sun. But in the case of the Earth and the moon, it's a different situation because the moon is, you know, nearly a quarter of the size of the Earth itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you really can see them more as a double world rather than the situation with the Earth and sun, where the Earth is just so much tinier, tiny, 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 compared to the sun, which is just huge.
Well, Deborah, I've seen the pictures of the telescope at the McDonald Observatory in Austin. Have you ever had the chance to look through that thing?
As a matter of fact, yes.
So,
and surprisingly enough, the view through, you know, when you look with your eye through a really large telescope like that, the view is surprisingly not as good as you would think. And the reason is that, you know, these large telescopes aren't designed for looking through. They're designed for gathering light from the faintest possible object. The larger the telescope, the fainter the object you can see. And, you know, you get a lot of light from the atmosphere and this kind of thing in the large telescopes, which, you know, maybe you don't get with, say, a smaller telescope, say a 30-inch telescope. The largest telescope at McDonald is a 107-inch telescope, and the 107 inches means the diameter of the primary mirror, which is located at the bottom of the telescope, and that's the thing that the light falls on. But, you know, for purposes of just looking at the sky, a smaller telescope really serves you better, and in fact, if you have a 6-inch telescope, you're just in really good shape. That's what I've got, a 6-inch telescope.
What is your background in astronomy?
What is my background? Well, actually, I'm an English major. And I got into astronomy just as a hobby. You know, there are a lot of amateur astronomers around the country, and I was one of them. I really got interested more in the physics part of it, because astronomy is physics. Actually, it's the physics of the stars. And I got interested more in the physics before I did into the stargazing part of it. You know, I was interested in reading about stars and how stars behave and, you know, how stars evolve and that kind of thing. And it was only after about a year or so of doing that that I got interested in actually looking at the sky myself.
Well, that's interesting because I'm an English major, too. And one of my hobbies is astronomy, although I don't go into it as thoroughly as you do. But I took an astronomy course here at Stony Brook once, and one of the things that I felt was wrong with it was the technical aspects were emphasized far too much, and it turned a lot of people off.
Right.
We didn't look at the sky at all, and that's something that really bothered me. I wanted to look at the stars. That's why I like astronomy. Instead, we pored over these calculations and figures and diagrams, and I almost got turned off to it myself.
Right. Well, you know, I took astronomy in college, in one of my first few years of college, and I think I made a low C or something, and I had the same experience. I got really turned off to it. It was only when I began reading about it on my own that I got really interested in it. And that's unfortunate because, you know, astronomy is just, in my opinion, the most fascinating subject there is. And it can be taught in a really boring way. I think that a lot of times when a professional astronomer goes through however many years of graduate school he has to go through to become a professional astronomer, because you have to be you have to have a PhD pretty much to do astronomy in this country, you know, professionally. I think that along the way sometimes you can kind of lose the excitement that you might have had when you started out.
Right.
So that the people who are, you know, teaching astronomy sometimes, you know, don't always convey that excitement. And, you know, it's not that it's not there. It's just that, you know, they themselves have forgotten it.
It seems that the more advanced the astronomer gets, the less he looks at the sky. I suppose that's important for understanding the physical makeup of the universe and everything, but you lose something. You lose the romantic sense of it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's not true of every astronomer. I mean, there are courses, you know, here at the University of Texas, there are courses that that you can take that are really great courses. And in fact, you know, I had left college for 2 years and worked on a newspaper for a while, and then came back and finished, and then I took astronomy again. And I think that the teacher that I had, who was a PhD astronomer, you know, is really in a large way responsible for, you know, sparking my interest in it. Like, I can't say that I learned everything I know from classes, because I for sure didn't. You know, I mostly learned it from just reading. But, you know, there are some good teachers around, so, you know, it's really not fair to generalize.
Well, what does, well, we know all about you and your background in astronomy, but I guess we're all wondering about Joel Block.
Of course. He's our star. He's great. Joel doesn't have a background in astronomy. He loves the subject, you know, just like anyone else does, and he knows quite a bit about astronomy now, having been with the program as long as he has. But he doesn't, you know, I don't know if he's ever read a book about it. He gets the same feeling, I think, that the listeners get when they hear on Stardate, for example, look up tonight and you can see a bright thing near the moon, that's Jupiter, you know. And maybe Joel himself will be, you know, he's told me that sometimes he'll be driving in his car and Stardate will come on, you know, because we take the program, you know, say 6 weeks to 2 months in advance. And, you know, here's Joel driving in his car and Stardate comes on, and he doesn't really remember so much taping that particular show, but it'll say, look up tonight and you can see Jupiter, and he'll look up and he gets that same good feeling that many of the other listeners get, because, you know, it's a really universal feeling that people get from looking at the sky. It's just a really positive, good thing, and I don't know exactly why, but I think that a lot of people share that feeling, and that's one of the reasons that Stardate has had the good luck that it's had on national radio.
Well, if you look up into the sky this weekend, you may well even see the space shuttle.
Right, yeah. I don't know about that. I don't know if you'll be able to see it or not. You can see, I know you can see satellites almost every night if you go out, like around sunset.
Oh, really?
With what kind of instruments?
Oh, with your eye, just with your naked eye.
You know, that's interesting, because I was once looking up at the sky, like lying down in the grass, and it was a very clear night. You could see hundreds and hundreds of stars. And I just was looking at one particular star, a very faint star, but right next to that star, a very even fainter light passed by slowly.
Right.
And I was wondering what in hell that was. Was it a UFO of some sort, or was it a satellite, a Sputnik? Who knows? I may never know. I don't think I'll ever find out what that was, but it's interesting.
Satellites.
How many satellites are in the sky now?
Pardon me?
How many satellites are there in the sky now?
I'm not for certain, but I think there's something like I know there's some magazine not too long ago had a contest. People were supposed to guess how many objects, not necessarily satellites, but just, you know, objects including pieces of debris from former satellites and that kind of thing. And I think the number was something like 10,000 things,
wow,
you know, up there, floating around up there.
So isn't it possible if something lifts off, it's going to bump into one of those things?
If something lifts off, it'll bump into them? Is that what you said?
Yeah, from the Earth. A rocket ship goes up from the Earth or something, it could hit a piece of Skylab or something.
Yeah, it's kind of vaguely possible, I guess. But again, there's so much room up there. I mean, you know, if there's 10,000 things up there, how big can each of them be? Satellites tend to be kind of small in terms of volume. So, it's not likely.
I'm just thinking of the kind of luck the space shuttle has had over the last couple of years. Hasn't been too good.
I know. They have had extremely bad luck, and it's really been unfortunate, some of the things that have happened.
It was supposed to be named the Enterprise at first, wasn't it?
Well, there was another shuttle. The shuttle that, there is an Enterprise.
Oh.
The shuttle that was drop tested from the airplane was the Enterprise. But that shuttle is not the one that's going into space. It's a different one.
What are they doing with that one?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It's probably in a hangar somewhere doing something with it. I don't know. And I don't know why that's not the one they decided to send into space. But I do know that there are a number of shuttles that are in different stages of development. And, the Enterprise was the first one, and it was the one that was tested first. I'm sure it'll fly sometime. It's bound to. But I don't know why it's not being flown this time.
How long are the astronauts going to stay there?
I think the number is 54 hours.
Oh, just 54 hours, and they're coming right back then.
Very sure.
Yeah, what they're doing now is they're just testing out the shuttle, more or less. I think the first four or five flights of the shuttle will be to iron out the engineering details of things and to, for example, one of the things they're going to do when they're up there is open the cargo bay doors, to make sure that they open properly and that kind of thing. So I don't think they're actually carrying experiments on this one. What they're doing is they're just experimenting more or less on the shuttle itself. Or maybe experimenting is the wrong word, but they're just, testing everything out to make sure that it all works right.
Well, one last question. Do you think the 1980s will again be a decade of space because of the launching of the space shuttle? Do you think this is a sign of things to come?
Well, I hope so. I think that there's no doubt but that the reason that the space program has suffered is that the public kind of lost interest. Like, it seemed as though, in the 60s, we were trying to beat the Russians to the moon, and that was the big thing. We had to beat them there, and we did beat them. But, everybody after that kind of said, well, we went to the moon, so what? And it cost a lot of money, and why should we do it? And, we went up there and brought back some rocks, and who cares, And it's just, it's kind of too bad that somebody didn't come around then and say, hey, space is.
But we also sent a ship to Mars, and we got some fantastic photographs from there. Same thing with Jupiter and Saturn. They didn't land, but we got amazing photographs. It raised interest for a little while, but it didn't seem to last.
Well, but on the other hand, look at the success of things like Star Wars and Close Encounters. I mean, there's no doubt but that the public is interested in space, and I think that the failure of the space program is not so much a failure of space as it is a failure of something like public relations, where NASA or someone made the decision to concentrate on spin-off technology and the things that we get from the space program that help us here on Earth. And when in fact the wonderful thing about space and the exciting thing about space is that it's a frontier, and that the human spirit needs frontiers, and the Earth is really getting crowded. And, sure, we can explore the oceans, that's true, but we also can go into space. And I think that all we need, all the space program needs, is for the public to come around and say, yeah, we want to do it. We want to go into space. And I don't know, you asked me if the 80s is going to be a decade of renewed interest in space. Well, I don't know for sure that it is, but I certainly think that the ground is fertile for that to happen, because it really seems to me, in my interaction with people, that people want space. They want for us to go into space, and they want these pictures of Saturn, and they want to know what's out there, because human beings want to explore. That's just part of our nature. And,
right.
And here's this whole new, whole new world. The moons of Jupiter are worlds, and they're actual places that we can go to, and we can land spaceships on those places, and we can get out of those spaceships, you know, we'll have to keep our spacesuits on because we can't breathe the air.
Well, I mean, this is it. I mean, this is exploring in a sense that we've never done it before. Everything is out there past the Earth, and we just have to start somewhere. I guess now is as good a time as any.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, I truly believe that people want to do it, and that the problem with the space program, the problem that the space program has had is that it just hasn't emphasized that aspect of the space program. You know, it's kind of stuck to the more mundane things, like, you know, that we can learn about Earth's weather and we can have these spin-off technologies and so on. And those are great. I mean, we need those things, and we need to understand Earth's weather, and we need the medical advances and the computer advances and things like that have come from the space program. But more than that, I think we need frontiers to explore, and space can give us that.
That's for sure.
Well, I think we concluded with some positive thoughts for the future, and I certainly hope we start doing something along those lines and stop bickering here on Earth, because there's plenty of space out there to do it.
Really. Well, I think that you know, a civilization that just looks inward just can't survive, and that you have to keep looking outward, and you have to keep expanding outward and glowing outward to survive and to grow, and that's, you know, that's what space has to offer, and it's a really basic thing that humans need.
Well, the next time you're on Long Island, make sure you drop in on us.
I will.
And give our best regards to Joel.
Okay, I'll tell him hello for you.
Yeah, we want to say thanks for talking to us.
Sure, it was my pleasure.
It's just too bad you couldn't be here in person.
I wish I could have. I thought about that earlier.
Well, next time we'll have to stick you on a space shuttle and have you dropped off.
All right, yeah.
I suppose as an astronomy person, you'd like to go up in space someday. You think it's possible, though?
For myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think that, you know, I mean, I'm only 30 now. I guess, you know, by the time I'm 60 or something, it could be radically different from what it is now.
Well, Arthur Clarke to this day still thinks he's going to make it up there before he dies.
Who's that?
Arthur Clarke, the author of Childhood's End.
Well, if he's going to make it, then I'm going to make it for sure. More than that, though, I have an 8-month-old daughter, and I think that she is really going to be able to go into space. I think that the kids nowadays are really lucky because they're living in a time when, you know, things are going to just be wonderful for them in terms of space. I really hope so. I really think it's going to be a great time to be alive for the kids who are being born now.
I hope so, too. And, well, thanks again, and keep on thinking positive.
Okay, well, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm speaking with Deborah Bird, who is the writer of Stardate, a program heard every night and at midnight.
And every afternoon at 5:58 p.m.
here on WUSB Stony Brook.
Calling all occupants of the planetary ground. Calling all occupants of the planetary ground. Calling all occupants of the planetary ground. far beyond the norm. You close your eyes, you concentrate, together that way. Descend on us, we declare.
Everything out. We'll compromise and guide the space shuttle over Mexico City.
Well, sounds good to me, Steve.
Attention, attention. The space shuttle will now lift off in T-minus 2 minutes. Please stand by. I think we're going to do it this time.
Less.
Yeah, I feel like we can finally relax now.
So what's new with you, anyway?
Oh, not much. The kids are in nursery school now, and I killed all the crabgrass in my lawn. I was going to go over
Excuse me, Steve. Well, wait a minute. What's that flashing red light over there mean?
Oh, that's low oxygen. Anyway, I was going to take the dog to the vet.
Low oxygen?
Right, low oxygen. Low oxygen?
Didn't you fill the tanks?
Me? That's your job. What are you talking about?
Oh, well, don't let the thing take off.
Oh, no, not again. Attention. Attention. The space shuttle will not be taking off from Cape Carnival as scheduled. Please stand by. I've got to go to the bathroom.
Radio Free Long Island. Music in the background by Stomo Yamashita, Steve Winwood, and Michael Shreve. But not anymore.
Who we're listening to?
We're listening to Tomita, Hiseo Tomita, actually. An album called The Bermuda Triangle. It's kind of a pink record. Fascinating music and really good sound quality on this. We listen to a spaceship lands emitting silvery light.
Mm-hmm.
I think right now we're on Electromagnetic Waves Descend for Coffee F. Romeo and Juliet Suite Number 2. Fascinating. I'll tell you my way over here tonight.
You got a ticket?
No, that was Bill Sankovich. He got a ticket while he was doing his show tonight. While I was walking over here, I saw a shooting star.
Really?
Yeah. And, well, I always consider it...
What was it shooting?
Very funny. I always consider it to be a special event when I see a shooting star, because you look at it, you see something streak across the sky, and you say, hey, what was that? And then suddenly you realize that was a shooting star.
You walked over.
Yeah.
Yeah, you weren't driving when you were looking up in the sky.
Well, no, it's...
You weren't like Joel Block driving around and then hearing himself on the radio and then looking...
That must be something to hear, you know, to be Joel Block and hear yourself.
You know? It must be, yeah.
I mean, there's only one person in the world that could do that, I guess.
Well, didn't you ever tape one of your shows and then be driving along while it was on the air?
Yeah. It did happen a couple of times.
Really?
But I usually turn to another station.
You don't have FM in your car, though.
No, but sometimes I'm in other people's cars and they have FM radios and I always turn it to the 90.1.
I've never done that. I've never taped a show to be put on the air and then heard it while I was driving around in my car.
Yes, but you've done live cars while you were driving, live shows while you were driving around in your car, didn't you?
No.
Did you tell me you heard yourself last Monday night when you were on the air, when you were driving in your car?
No.
No?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, I thought you said it bounced off the moon or something and came back a couple of hours later.
Oh, yeah, that's right, after we had signed off on my way home.
Yeah. You weren't just kidding about that?
No.
I thought you were in kind of a strange state.
But wait a minute. If it was moon bounce, it would have taken
a matter of seconds to get back.
Well, yeah, but 90.1 waves aren't quite as quick as other waves. They move...
Either is the talent.
That's true. As evidenced.
Yeah.
No, but radio waves travel indefinitely out into the sky, and...
That's true.
Right, no, now, actually, the radio waves, I think, of the first Radio Free Long Island show are about near Uranus now.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I meant... You can't say anything on this show anymore.
Oh, boy.
Well, why are we talking about space tonight? Because of the space shuttle that was supposed to go off this morning and didn't. We planned the whole bit. Oh, you know what we have? We have some tapes from NASA that they sent us.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember those?
No, I never heard them.
I never heard them either, but they're still in a bag that came in the mail. And we're going to open them later on and play them. They're I guess, propaganda tapes or something. It's pretty interesting. I think they talk about the space shuttle on one or two occasions.
Good.
So we'll get to that a little bit later.
I used to read a publication of NASA called their Tech Briefs.
Tech Briefs, yeah, that sounds obscene.
It does, doesn't it? But it was just applications of their technology to the normal industrial world.
Oh, how long ago was that?
Well, last job I was working on, before I got laid off.
Oh.
That's another... half-hour story.
Well, we don't want to get into that, certainly.
I was carpooling with a guy.
Oh, boy.
No, actually...
I'm very happy we managed to talk to Deborah Berg for so long.
Hey, don't we have the tripods coming up a little
bit
later?
The tripods, yeah. Well, the tripods are about the only thing on this show that are not dealing with space. They're just... today they're talking about Uncle Jonathan coming. Anybody who's been listening to the tripods... Well, I mean, he did arrive in the last show, didn't he? I think he did. Well, the doorbell rang, and they think it's Uncle Jonathan. And, okay, we'll find out if it is Uncle Jonathan when the next show starts. All right, we'll get to that in a little while. We have the NASA tapes coming up, or a whole bunch of other surprises for you.
Are they censored?
The NASA tapes, I believe, are censored, yes.
Are they fit for human ears?
That I'm not sure of. We'll have to find out. We'll test our subjects out there.
Right.
And if anybody out there wants to make a comment, wait a minute.
You're what? Assuming that there's people out there.
Well, people, aliens, all sorts of crazy things.
If you just happen to be stumbling through the area, and you're listening to us...
If you're lost and you want to find your way out, call us. We'll tell you how to leave.
Well, no, I'll let you tell them.
There are a lot of strange people walking around campus today. Tonight, rather. They're having all sorts of weird events tonight.
Huh?
Yeah, well, it's the spring weather. It's what's the temperature out there?
52.
It's warm. It seems warmer than that, actually.
52 degrees outdoor, 73 degrees indoor.
Yeah, but it's 52 in the shade, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's minus 88. No, plus 14. Well,
what is wrong with that thing, anyway? Why does it say minus 88 every time you hit it?
I don't know. But it's not plus 14 degrees C. It's 11 degrees.
Well, that thing's all messed up. All right. Chief engineer has to work on that.
But why don't we give the our listener the number?
Oh, yes. Okay. Good idea. 246-7901, area code 516. And we know there are a lot of folks out there in Connecticut, too. And just because the name of the program is Radio Free Long Island, we don't want you to feel left out. I mean, it's not your fault you were born in Connecticut.
Next.
Can't help it. You can always move to Long Island later.
Next week,
let you know houses open up.
Next week, why don't we call our program Radio Free Southern Connecticut?
That might be a good idea.
Good idea.
About radio-free northeastern seaboard area general vicinity.
How about radio-free United States?
Well, that I'm not sure of, because our listeners in California don't pick us up on a regular basis.
That's true.
And Alaska's right out. But
we hit Alaska one night.
Oh, we called Alaska. That's true.
Yeah.
We called England. We called all over the
Did we
the
get
globe.
The bill for that call yet?
I don't know. It was charged to your home phone.
Yeah, it didn't come through on this bill.
That's good. Well, maybe somebody made a mistake, but we don't have to talk about that now.
Yeah.
Okay, the tripods are coming your way very soon, and we'll see what fate brings them. We'll see what fate brings us.
246-7901.
With the Three Village Tobacco Farms presents The Tripod Family, the story of one of America's most illustrious families and their struggle to find peace and happiness in the Long Island suburbs. When we left our friends last week, Kathy had just opened a letter from her Uncle Jonathan in California, which revealed that he was coming out that day. And as we join our friends today, we hear Kathy say,
"Well, that must be him now."
"Yes, I guess it is. Do you want me to get it?"
No. That's all right, dear. I'll go."
"Listen, Kathy, Howard, I really don't want to intrude on your family affairs."
No. You're not intruding."
No, not at all. You can stay if you want to."
"After all, you're practically one of the family by now anyway."
"Well, I appreciate that, but I really have a lot of work to do. I think I'm going to put a Long Island Loves Newsday sticker on my mailbox."
"Well, you know what's best, Charlie."
"Sure do, Mr. T. I'll leave through the back door. I guess I'll see you all later."
"Yes, so long, Charlie."
"Yeah, take it easy, Charlie."
"Bye, Charlie. What a nice neighbor he is."
"Yeah, it kind of makes me glad we moved out here to Long Island."
"Well, I don't know if I'll ever be happy about moving out here. I mean, Charlie's a nice guy and all that, but Big Bear City was..."
"Pop, how many times do we have to go through this?"
"Yes, come on. Enough with Big Bear City.
Yeah.
We're here to start a new life."
"After all, Pop, it's been almost 3 months since we moved out here. I'd think you'd start to come around by now."
"Well, I don't know how in tarnation you two expect me to change my mind. Confound it all. I was born and raised in Big Bear City. I lived there 75 years without leaving it once."
"Yes, that is true."
"And now I'm supposed to just drop everything and forget all about it?"
"Yeah, he is right in the way, Kathy. I still think of Big Bear City every now and then. I wonder what's going on there right now."
"Oh, the Jupiter trees are probably in full bloom by now. I can almost smell the fragrance."
"Yes, they were lovely. And did you know that Big Bear City is the only place in the world where they grow?"
No, that's wrong."
"Oh?"
"Yeah, I read in a book somewhere that they grow in Dahomey as well."
"Where?"
"Dahomey. It's in Africa."
"Oh, I think you mean Benin."
No. I saw it in print, and it was definitely Dahomey."
"Yes,
D-A-H-O-M-E-Y.
That may be so, but you see, they changed the name of the country a few years ago. It used to be called Dahomey. Now it's Benin."
"You must be joking. I mean, they changed the name of an entire country?"
"Well, it's not that big to start with. I think it's about half the size of Rhode Island thereabouts."
"Yes, but if they can do it there, that means they can do it here, too. Imagine..."
Imagine if
we wake up someday and they've changed the name of the country to Uranus or Pluto or something."
"Well, I doubt if they could do that. I mean, you usually have to have a revolution or something before you change the name. I don't think we're going to have one of those, at least not for a while."
"But I never heard of such a thing, where they actually changed the name of an entire country. I mean, it sounds crazy, kind of silly."
"It happens all the time, Kathy."
"Yeah, all the time."
"Yeah, there are lots of examples. Iran used to be called Persia, Bangladesh was part of Pakistan."
"And Germany was once called Prussia. I can remember that."
"Remember the Belgian Congo?"
"Yeah."
"Yeah, now that's called Zaire."
"It was."
"And the Central African Republic used to be the Central African Empire."
"Really?"
"Yeah, and before that it was the Central African Republic again."
"A long time ago, France was known as Gaul."
"I didn't know that one, Pop."
"Well, I didn't either. Frankly, I didn't know any of those. But then again, why should I? I'm just a housewife, that's all, from California. And now I'm on Long Island, starting a new life."
"Speaking of Gaul, is that someone I see trying to climb through our front window?"
"Oh, yes. My gosh, it's Uncle Jonathan. We forgot he was out there at the front door this whole time."
"We'd better help him get in."
"I wouldn't help that bum with anything except getting him a one-way ticket on a plane heading west."
"Here, take my hand, Uncle Jonathan."
"We're so sorry we left you out there."
"Oh, it's all right, Kathy. I needed a fresh air. My, you look more gorgeous every time I set eyes on you."
"Why, thank you, Uncle dear.
Did you have a nice trip out, Uncle Jonathan?"
"Oh, I'll get that."
"Yes, it was pleasant. I rented a jet that had a sauna on it, and
yes.
I spent most of my time there.
Yes,
I also played a little tennis, and..."
"Uncle Jonathan, it's for you."
"Oh, let me take care of that. Oh, but while I'm on the phone, I'd like you to think over what I came out here to discuss, Howard.
Here it comes.
I understand that a while back you did some work in the movies.
I didn't know that.
Well, it really wasn't that much. I was just one of the people walking down the street at the end of Godspell.
That's something you never told me about it.
Well, I know somebody who's had some sort of experience to star in a major motion picture I'm producing. I think you have all the qualifications, Howard. So think it over while I'm on the phone, and let me know what you think.
Howard, a major motion picture?
I'm flabbergasted. I don't know what to say.
You two ought to be ashamed saying all those things about your Uncle Jonathan. I knew he'd come through. I knew it. I just knew it.
And so, as Uncle Jonathan finally makes his appearance, he makes a surprise offer to Howard. And you'll want to be with us next time when we'll hear Howard say,
"You want to film it where?"
That's next time on The Tripod Family, presented in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
That's beautiful Zelda from the Bonzo Dog Band here on Radio Free Long Island. Now let's hear something from Holst. This is called Uranus. Thank you.
Wonder and vastness of the administrative bureaucracies of our time. Join me on a journey through these awesome creatures as we slash billions and billions of dollars from their greedy mouths. See the effects that one man can have on the lives of hundreds of millions of individuals. We'll learn about how nice huge corporations can be, and how evil and perverted those social programs of ours really are. Join us as we redistribute the wealth of our land to the wealthy and keep it out of the hands of poor people who don't really need it in the first place.
Cosmos with Ronald Sagan. Weeknights on Radio Free Long Island.
The Living Theater of the Absurd brings you Sword Trek.
Space is the final frontier. But what do we mean by final? Can anyone truly say that they understand the finality? Of being in nothingness? And while we are on the subject, is not the inner working of our mind truly the final frontier? And that reminds me of the time I was...
Oh, shut up, John Paul.
Oui, mon captain.
Captain's log, stardate 1202. The Enterprise is ferrying an important cargo of crystal meth to the Earth colony Kierkegaard's Island, whose inhabitants are falling asleep from existential dread. Philosophy officer Sartre has volunteered to remain in the colony in order to teach them the meaning of...
There is no meaning, mon captain. That is the whole point.
Shut up, John Paul.
Captain, you neglected to mention that in order to deliver the drugs, we shall have to pass perilously close to the Klingon patrol zone.
Thank you, Mr. Spock, but I'm sure nothing could possibly happen. Maybe I'll take a little nap.
That's what my granddaddy said when them damn Yankees came and repossessed the plantation. I think y'all better keep on your toes.
All right, McCoy, all right, if it'll make you happy.
What is happiness? Oh, there is an absurdity if I ever heard one. To depend on a totally random definition of a word that in itself is without meaning is asking for mental anguish. And what is anguish? Are we capable of discerning...
Shut up, John Paul.
Captain Hunter, I'm picking up signals from an approaching Klingon vessel.
What did I tell y'all?
On audio, please, Lieutenant O'Hara.
This seems grave. They have orders from the Grand Wazoo of the Klingon Empire to destroy the Enterprise. Most illogical.
Logic? Ah, there you have opened up a can of worms indeed, my friend. All that we know about logic is that if we allow for certain concepts of empiricism, then certain consequences follow. What kind of system is this, eh?
Crazy honky.
Stow it, John Paul. We can outrun these slow, clumsy Klingons with our powerful warp drive, so we have nothing to worry about.
Cut them, the engines! It's the gnomes again! We've lost warp drive!
Lost? But what a strange concept! To lose something, one must in the first place have it! And there we run into trouble with the definition of concepts such as position. What can we truly know?
Shut up, Jean-Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Spock. Well, all we can do is sit tight and hope they forget or won't notice us.
Getting another transmission from the Klingon, Sugar Plum.
My God, they plan to use the neutral stink bomb. I've got to make a command decision fast.
Oh-ho! Here we have a fine example of a man about to be burdened with all the consequences of a decision which is his alone. He will have to rethink his life's philosophies, and I seriously doubt that there is a supreme being who will help him in this case.
Shut up. Helmsman, fire photon torpedoes. Hey, what happened?
It would appear that no more torpedoes at present are being fired.
Captain, we've run out of photon torpedoes. I must have forgot to pick them up when I stuck the pot mark.
He's dead, Jim.
Hold on, McCoy. Nobody's dead.
I'm a doctor, not a lawyer. I wish I was in Dixie. Hooray, hooray. Give me a mint julep and a bucket of fried chicken.
McCoy seems to be having hysterics. I had better render him unconscious via my unique Vulcan nerve pinch.
What a fix you are in, eh, mon captain? But perhaps the Klingons are not real, no? And perhaps we are not real. Perhaps it is all but a figment of the imagination.
The Klingons are attacking, Captain. We could be destroyed. We are helpless.
We may be helpless, but perhaps none of this is real. What will be our outlook on this? Shall we disintegrate into the complete nausea of the realization that the framework...
Shut up. We're doomed.
The framework in which we base our everyday decisions has crumbled, no? Or shall we...
Shut up. Captain, I have an idea. We can hear the Klingons.
Shall we seek justification of our actions and thereby...
Shut up. And the Klingons can hear us. I get it. Put Sartre on audio, Uhura. Let's give the Klingons a ride they'll never forget.
And thereby become involved in a search for true meaning. But where to begin such an awesome task? Do we seek meaning in the perfect flatness of a flat surface?
Do we seek it within Nielsen ratings? It's all a farce. We can know nothing whatsoever. What's the use of trying to carve our pitiful inroads in the meaning of life? We must act because we must function in this meaningless vacuum. Existence over Wheaties. Let us now sing Le Marseillaise.
In a harrowing frenzy of existentialist gibberish. Captain, you can take your fingers out of your ears now.
Well, that's that. The drugs have been safely beamed down, and so has Lieutenant Sarge. Am I glad to get rid of him?
I believe you echo the sentiments of the entire crew.
Hey, who's this? I don't recognize. Ensign Wittgenstein reporting for duty, Captain. Have you ever wondered about clarity of thought? Are you trying to worm your way out of the labyrinthine jungle of philosophical madness? Although I cannot teach you any new truths, I can give you a new method. Life is but a comic strip. Ah, the Zen masters sought to give peace by means...
Oh, no!
This is music of Michael Honig.
Fascinating.
Aren't we all?
So what do you think of Star Trek?
It was decent. Quite decent.
I'd say decent, too.
Decent, yes.
Tell me something, Mike. Have you ever seen something that you thought was a UFO?
No.
Never?
No, never.
It happened to me once.
What did you see?
Well, I was really kind of upset about it after it happened, because we were going down a major highway, and we just happened to be looking up in the sky, and said, hey, what is that thing anyway? It doesn't look like an airplane. And it didn't look like an airplane. It was moving in a weird pattern, and there were lights actually circling around it, like, you know, your classic flying saucer. So we followed the thing. We followed it into center reach, of all places, into a parking lot. And we were right underneath it. And we got out of the car. We saw cars stopping in the middle of the street, people pointing up. It was just like out of one of those 1950s films. And we got out of the car. We looked up and said, hey, what is this thing? And we looked at it carefully. And on the very bottom of it, very slowly, was spelling out an ad for used cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was upset, and I'll tell you why, because...
I did see that thing.
It got my hopes up.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw it too?
Yeah.
And you didn't think it was a UFO?
I guess I was pretty close to it.
Well, what is this stuff underneath us anyway? I think UFOs are taking control of the station here.
This is called Sun and Moon. How come you folks always put these labels right over the titles?
Oh, that's to make it challenging. It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Hey, you want a bagel? Nancy brought up some bagels for us.
And we're getting pizza, too.
We're getting pizza, too.
We're
going
to get fat.
Pizza 3.
No, I don't want a bagel.
It's a sequel to Pizza 1.
No, I'll...
Wouldn't it be a great horror film, Pizza? The whole world gets taken over by it, and pizza appears everywhere, or everything around turns into a pizza.
Produced by Bunky and Spunky, of course.
Oh, what a horrible thing that would be. Everyone's walking around with tomato sauce all over them, and slices of pizza dripping down their mouths. And
mozzarella all over their heads.
Mushrooms and anchovies.
This girl, kind of a stupid girl,
you know, the Farrah Fawcett type, is stuck in the whole thing. She's trying to get out, and she's saying, oh, help me, please. And, you know, one of the scenes could be tomato sauce dripping all over her, and, you know, sort of get the, you know,
adult
over 18 crowd.
And under 18.
True.
I'll help her out. I'll be the first one to.
Pizza.
Well, where do Bunky and Spunky fit into that?
Bunky and Spunky? They probably caused it all.
Yeah.
It was their, one of their experiments that went haywire or something.
Those scoundrels.
Hey, are we going to be hearing from them later on?
Yes.
Oh, they have some tips on us for space safety, is
space
that
space safety, yeah.
Good, good.
We run by popular request.
Right, popular demand, actually.
That's
popular
correct.
Popular threat, in fact.
Yeah.
But we don't have to get into that.
No, I wish we wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason that. I don't think the management would approve of that at all.
No, management would not go for that. One bit.
Did you ever look through a telescope, though?
Yeah. In fact, I have a telescope. A friend of mine gave me an old telescope.
Really?
Little dinky thing.
And
I used it to spy on the neighbors, you know.
Well, I mean, astronomical things.
Nah.
We'll talk about spying on the neighbors next week. But
did you
ever look at the stars or the planets or the moon even?
No, I did look at the moon through it. Yes, I did.
And I guess the moon really isn't that exciting to look through a small telescope. Because
I can't look through the moon at all.
I don't know where I'm at now.
You're in Stony Brook.
You see a bigger thing than what you see already. But if you look at various stars, you see double stars, you see planets, you see moons of planets.
Wait a minute.
What?
You don't see planets of stars.
No, I didn't say that. I said you see planets.
Oh, like in our solar.
Right, our solar. That's the only planets we know of.
Boy.
Well, Deborah Berg was telling us before,
that's
we don't
right.
have the capacity. But that's going to be something when that space telescope goes up.
Yeah.
We'll be able to see all sorts of things. And if there are any planets, I know there are planets. I mean, I don't really know, but I really have a strong feeling there are. There have to be. Look at all the stars out there.
Yeah.
Billions and billions of stars.
So then is there life?
Why not?
Sure.
How could there not be? I mean, we're one sun. We're such a typical sun, too. It's such a, you know, a very ordinary part of the solar system.
The galaxy.
We're not in the center of it. We're just sort of cast aside. One little tiny sun.
Where is the center?
The center is another part of the Milky Way. It's
galaxy.
The center of our galaxy?
Yeah, the Milky Way galaxy.
Aha!
And the thing that really boggles my mind is the galaxies then sort of revolve around other centers of the universe, and galaxies form clusters and so on and so on. It just keeps going and getting bigger.
Yeah.
And there are probably universes that cluster, and there are other universes.
Do you think
they go on forever? And it goes on.
If they cluster, do you think they collide?
Below us, too. Excuse me?
If they cluster, do you think they collide?
They must. It wouldn't be a collision like two cars going into each other.
But
it would take millions and millions of years, but they do collide.
Think of all the gravitational pull two stars would have for one another.
Oh, sure.
Boom!
Yeah, well, double stars constantly revolving around each other, and they always are exerting gravitational pull. Everything in space exerts some sort of gravitational pull. Jupiter is exerting some gravitational pull on you right now.
Jupiter is.
Everything is.
Did somebody answer that phone?
Saturn.
That's probably
Mars, the Sun, of course. Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. Pluto has a moon now, according to Joel Block's
right.
Stardate, and
right.
That moon of Pluto's is attracting us a little bit. But of course, the main thing that attracts us is Earth, gravitational force,
so that
and that's why we stay here and don't go out there.
So is that equipment console you're sitting next to?
Everything does. You know.
Right. Okay.
We all have our gravitational forces.
It's negligible.
This bagel in front of me is attracting me to it.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to accept. Who are you waving at?
Nancy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Sure is.
So it's a big place out there. Hi, Nancy. Thank you for the bagel. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Whatever I
can do. It's got great gravitational force, too.
I don't know how you can eat bagel or pizza here.
It's here already?
Already?
Yeah, I'm just going to go down and open it.
Oh, do you have money for it?
Do I have
pizza? Oh, that was the pizza man on the phone. Oh, boy. All right, Mike's paying for it. Isn't that something, ladies and gentlemen? Mike always pays for the pizza.
Ha ha.
And he never has to be paid back either, and he's not. Isn't that something?
Thanks, Nancy.
True gentleman, Mike.
We'll give you a slice. It's 2 o'clock, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
New York.
You know,
I wonder if there's a Stony Brook anywhere else. Do you think there is? If anybody out there knows of a Stony Brook that is not in New York.
I think there's one in Dahomey.
Dahomey? I think you mean Benin.
No. It's Dahomey. Dahomey.
Did you read that in the book somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's the only other place besides some little hick town in California where Jupiter trees glow.
Well, maybe you mean Togo.
No. Togo's right next to it.
Yeah, I know Togo's right next to it. Are you
but
sure you don't mean Togo?
I'm sure I don't.
A lot of people confuse Albania with it, too.
Yeah, well, no. Nah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Malta, too.
No. Nah.
How about maybe Sri Lanka or Equatorial Guinea? You sure you're not thinking of that?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay, he's sure. What did you... Oh, my God. You just found an album called Togo. How did you know that was there?
Because it's under T.
Music from West Africa. This is actually from Togo. This is amazing. Let's hear what Togo music sounds like.
Yeah.
Togo. It says here, we are very happy to present an exceptionally diversified sampling of traditional Togolese music. It's also a concise glimpse of the very rich culture of this region of West Africa, once termed the slave coast by the slave traders. Today, there are no more reminders to the younger generations of this sinister business, except occasionally in a name or other vestiges of the era. In any case, the folk song, which translates popular concerns and thus reveals, at least in part, the profound spirit of these peoples, bears no trace of these painful memories. It's interesting, the music that we find over here. How come I didn't even know this record was here?
I don't know.
Music from Togo. It says, somebody wrote a comment, Dan. I just have to read it. This group is the Clash of Africa.
Looks like your handwriting.
It's not my handwriting, I swear.
No, that's your handwriting.
Even Costello can't top this. New Wave African. I think Bill Lazaroff wrote that. Well, it has his name on it somewhere, but someone might have written that for him.
Yes.
It's on Rhonda Records, and I have to hand it to them. And it's a very interesting album. I'm glad we get records like this.
I am, too. Shows how diverse, in fact, we really are.
We are very diverse. Well, I think the guys at Cape Carnival are going to give it another try at the space shuttle.
In a few minutes, yeah.
All right, why don't we hear another song by the Togo people? This is called Akofa Akusa. It's by Lili. Let's listen to it. Bob, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'd like a straight answer.
What is it, Steve?
Is there anything, and I mean anything, that we haven't checked out thoroughly and completely?
Nothing.
You're sure?
Absolutely.
Okay, let's keep our fingers crossed. Attention, attention, this is Cape Carnival Control. We have restarted the countdown for the space shuttle. The space shuttle will be lifting off in minus 1 minute. Okay, Bob, we're all set.
And the astronauts have their oxygen now, and they're really happy, Steve.
Good, good. Now, okay, I'm going to... What's that?
I think I do know.
You've got to be kidding. There wasn't a cloud in the sky 2 minutes ago.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know what we have to do, Steve.
I know it by heart. Ladies and gentlemen... Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? This is Cape Carnival Control. The space shuttle will not be taking off. I repeat, will not be taking off on schedule.
Please stay posted. We'll give you all the details as they come in. Again, the space shuttle will not be taking off due to rain. Thank you.
Okay.
I'm gonna kill myself.
No.
Thank you.
night. Zero out, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much, I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight.
That's Elton John for you. Working from
Top 40 back. Radio on USB FM.
Hey, I just figured it would be nice to play that. I mean, we're playing space music, and it's not really spacey, but it's about space. So,
yeah.
It was appropriate, I think.
Yeah.
Any suggestions on any of the spacey things to play?
How about something from Miko or something like that?
Miko? How about something from Star Wars? Hey, yeah, that sounds good.
Great idea.
You want to play that? Okay, let's put that.
Why don't you rewind it? Start from the beginning.
We just did that. That's good enough.
Okay.
But it fell back a little bit.
Okay. Now caught up. So, Mike, you gotta tell me something. What do you think?
About what?
By the year, let's say, by the year 2001, do you think you, Mike Juhas, and me, Eric Corley, will be in the position to make reservations on spaceships and go up to the sky and check it out up there?
I don't know.
Well, what do you think? You gotta think something.
Yes.
You think so?
Provided that you supply your own transportation.
Ah. You know, that brings up an interesting point, though. A lot of people are thinking of sponsoring... Thanks, Frank.
Frank. Wait, did he drop you another ice cube?
He dropped another ice cube down my back, but I'm not going to pay attention to him. Unless he does it again, then I'll throttle him.
Frank, why don't you go call Kinky Computer?
Yeah.
Bye.
Anyway, a lot of private corporations are thinking of sending spaceships up themselves because they're just totally disgusted with the way things are working.
Through the government.
Through the government. So,
hey, we still have to play that NASA tape.
I just remembered that myself at the very same second you did. Frank, why did you get that? There's a NASA tape inside.
It's back on the shelf in his room there.
Yeah.
It's a red box.
Don't do it, Frank. Frank, please don't do that. Oh, you're taking it away. Oh, that's nice of you, Frank. Thank you.
Frank was taking Eric's ice cube away.
You mean there was an ice cube on my back and I didn't know about it?
You must be cold-blooded or something.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I want to do. In my entire lifetime, I just want to go up there. And be off the earth for a little while. It would be great. I mean, just to look down and say, there's Earth, and there's the rest of it all.
And bring your camera with you.
Oh, definitely.
I just picked up some, I got some Landsat imagery of Long Island.
Oh, that's from the satellite?
Yeah.
That's another amazing thing.
Plus, I got some Skylab imagery as well.
Skylab?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Got it from,
The Space Shuttle.
Oh, here we go.
Transportation system for the future.
Okay, we'll play that later.
Let's see what's on. Let's take a look at
this. Let's see what's on.
Oh, give me this. All right, why don't you look at it then?
Stop.
Look at it so badly.
Here, I'll give you a plastic bag. Put it over your head or something. The Space Shuttle. Transportation system for the future.
That's what I was thinking, that plastic bag. There's not even a hole.
Oh, there is a hole in there. History of the Space Shuttle. MagSat and the Earth's Magnetic Field.
That's perfect.
GOES. That's the Geostationary Orbital Earth Satellite or something like that.
Something like that.
I think the G does stand for geostationary. A look at hurricanes and storms.
Can I see that?
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, well, let's take a look at some of the space shuttle things. We'll put that on for you.
Sure.
Ladies and gents, and...
We do have Bunky and Spunky coming up within
Bunky
the next...
Spunky is coming
so
up,
much
too.
Coming up within the next half hour.
Guys at Kid Carnival are going to give it another whirl.
They are?
Yeah, I think so.
Really?
Yeah. I think the rain is ending, finally.
Is it really?
Down in Kid Carnival, yeah.
Oh.
It's still hailing.
No, it's not hailing.
Please, don't make it hail in the studio again, Frank. Thank you.
You don't want me to lose control of myself again, do you?
Well,
let's cue this up then.
Let's see what's coming up. We'll be right back.
Next, a look at the space shuttle, transportation system for the future. This is the Space Story, a weekly space and aeronautics report brought to you by this station and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. When we think of the role that trains, automobiles, and airplanes have played in modern civilization, it becomes evident that the introduction of new and better modes of transportation have historically improved our standards of living. The current space shuttle represents the first of a new type of space transportation system which will one day be taking people to and from Earth orbit. Leroy Day, NASA's Director of Systems Engineering and Integration in Washington, D.C., explains why the shuttle will increase the effectiveness of using space for commercial and scientific purposes.
Well, the space shuttle, of course, is an entirely different mode of operating in space from what we've been doing up to this time. It's underlying objective that we had right from the very beginning, keeping in mind cost, was to make it reusable. And we've not done that before. We're today flying, continuing to fly. We'll do for some period of time until the shuttle is fully operational. Very expensive, expendable rockets, which are good for a single flight, and then pieces of them fall into the ocean, and others burn up as they re-enter the atmosphere. The shuttle, on the other hand, can make repeated flights with the same hardware. And the hardware is very expensive, but if you use it over and over again as you do an airplane, of course the payoff is there. It is a very abrupt change from the way we've been doing business, and it opens up great possibilities because it makes it economically feasible to do lots of things.
The economics of the space shuttle are largely derived from its reusability and also from its ability to deliver very large payloads to space, return them to Earth, and repair them in space if necessary.
Suppose we have a very expensive telescope, for example, in space, and the scientists want to put new experiments on the telescope, want to update it. Then if you could return that telescope, which may be several hundred million dollars worth of equipment, to the Earth and have it refurbished and launch it again for a very modest cost, the savings on the number of programs can be very large. Because of this, the size and capabilities of the shuttle to stay in orbit for a number of days or weeks, it can carry out manned experiments also. And that'll be done in the kind of a laboratory which is put in the payload bay of the shuttle, and the scientists and technicians, in addition to the normal crew members, will go along and experiments that might involve maybe medical experiments. They may be experiments where you would like to have the people to operate some devices. These are done in a laboratory that's carried inside the space shuttle for a particular flight.
The space shuttle orbiter can carry anywhere from 3 to 4 satellites into orbit at one time. In the past, it took one rocket to launch each of these satellites.
A lot of people referred to it like a space truck or something like that to try to get across the idea that it was a versatile thing, that you could put a lot of different types of payloads in and carry them up, and you can do different things on each mission. You can go to different altitudes, different inclinations, different orbits. You can stay for days or weeks. And you can carry a range from the minimum of two flight crew to fly the space shuttle up to 7 people. So you could have a crew of 2 or 3, and you could carry 4 along 3 or 4 additional scientists or technicians or whatever. Whatever is dictated by the mission you want to do.
This has been the Space Story, a weekly space and aeronautics report brought to you by this station and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Leonard Scott reporting. Coming up next, a look at the history of the space shuttle. This is The Space Story, a weekly space and aeronautics report brought to you by this station and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Since 1958, when the U.S. launched its first satellite, the nation has learned to use space as a tool for the benefit of all. The key to developing the space frontier is the space shuttle, for it will give us the capability to provide large-scale benefits from space through economical transportation. Leroy Day, Director of Systems Engineering and Integration at NASA, says the name shuttle was used for the first time in an article in Collier's Magazine written by Werner von Braun in the mid-1950s.
He had an article about the future activities in space with the space stations and the permanent colonies and what have you, a very visionary thing compared to many of the other more prosaic studies that have been done since that time. Later, in the mid-60s, there were already serious studies, both in this country and overseas, about reusable vehicles that could be put into space and then could be returned to the Earth and would land like an airplane, like our present-day space shuttle, and be reused again.
So, the activity and the visions about recoverable, low-cost transportation systems goes back pretty far. The question is, why, then, have we persisted so long with the current mode of expendable vehicles?
It really has to do with the state of technology, because while these studies looked at various configurations of vehicles and were theoretically possible, the practical aspects of both propulsion and, in some cases, structure, making the vehicle sufficiently light and strong, and of a proper kind of thermal insulation that would allow them to re-enter without and be reused again, those were technologies that hadn't advanced far enough, and we couldn't do it earlier. The more sophisticated propulsion systems that we used in Apollo gave us the background, that is, using hydrogen and oxygen that are very energetic fuels to give a very high propulsion efficiency. If you go back to concepts and the original vision of the space shuttle as we know it today, you'd have to go back to Dr. George Miller. And you'd have to go back to the time frame of 1968.
Led by Dr. George Miller, NASA began a series of studies on the economics and engineering feasibility of a space shuttle.
Out of these series of studies and investigations involving the major aerospace companies of this country, and to some extent involving some participation by European firms also, we arrived at the present-day configuration. Its development was announced by the President of the United States in January of 1972, and the development really began from that time. From that period on, we no longer were looking at different options. We were looking at a vehicle which is almost identical to the vehicle that we talk about today. A few pictures of models and drawings that we had at that time. Unless you are looking very carefully at details, you will say, well, that's the same system. That in itself is remarkable, that it's gone from that early planning stage to actuality with no major changes. And I think that's a tribute to the amount of work that we put in prior to that time in terms of studies and the technology work that we initiated at that time, which made it possible for the present vehicle.
This has been The Space Story, a weekly space and aeronautics report brought to you by this station and NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Leonard Scott reporting. Zeitzgürtel. Das Herzchen des Herzens geht an euch erscheinen. Das Herz des Herzens darf nicht fallen. Ja, das geht an euch. Das Herz zielt nur. Ihr holt das Herz und habt es gesehen.
Reden Sie bitte auf vom Zoff, die Impfung im Rest der Dächer, die wird so wie es noch ein Kiste der Nähe. Sie hat so. Das ist ein Rest im Rest der Dächer. Ne, ihr dürft die Wetter wohnen, das ist ein Jesus, du bist das Dächer, das ist ein Jesus, das ist ein Mann, so. Hier, du weißt, du hast du es, sie hat zu mir. Hier, ich hätte mal, hier, du hast noch, das ist der Oberkammer, das ist ein Fass, das ist ein Mann. Das ist ein Mann, das ist ein Mann, das ist ein Mann, das ist ein Mann, Now, Saturday, he was in yard, and that's all around the sister. He had the time across the evening, okay, but it's more than just no more, sister. Okay, then in the club, you finish part of it, then in the club, we're all on. You know, here, stand with me, you did it. Here, I've got a lot of the news, the investigation under every night, and the stairs to know you in the dark, but up, snow and the snow, and I've got it, sit. The sheriff gets in the air in the dark, but that's my hour of you. Well, that's what's my hair from the east, bring you out in the surface. I'm asking you all in the next skin, that's his neck. Here's next, that's it, my. See, it's right. Again, I'm involved in the shake, starting in the sea, that's what, was here, see it. See it with that.
Well, that's yet, sir. Yeah, but it was eating here, isn't it? The skin, I think, you'll see it, that's was here, sir. I give the sign. Here, I'm sure, you've got that bill.
Yeah, it's just me, it's not a mere from the house, but it's got a book side of you in the, I'll let me see the ocean, you've got this. Oh, Scott, what kind of... He hadn't told you for the last ship. He had about... This year. Well, it's your written that. Spice enough, because now we're Scott, what kind of ship. We had some ships in soft, but now here, but they did. So we get us in the air, but in this town, in this area. And we just say that... No, I've got the survey go off, but see you got some ships in soft, but they did it, just show me. I read it and looking with an old snap and then that was in Lancaster Floyd. And I just knew you read me. Not where any was. There's no lie on the wind shells in the home earth. The knocker of hawk for the If the alien ships are even the campers, that's the sickness and then it's off before the scouts have a carpet. Or the hawk will get every room in it. So, okay, then she ever gets in the care of this one. See, that's the object. He's not interested in it. He's the way to say everything.
So, okay, well, the next give it on earth to the wall of us. This is your view. Now, say, it is chocolate. There are a few of cabs, look. Some of this is the chest of cabs, all cool. Over rock, your rabbits in the ship, and they eat the rest now, of course.
Now, you can see, you're eating that whole ship. He doesn't look like up. And the upper end of the gallon now, the Missouri, the nearest, the reed, looking at the net. See, it's a new field, that's all big. Well, but do you, Barbara? See, you serve one who's next in the fort. See, that's here, see them all. Her with. See, it's Christy, and they're already. My assessment's none of us, that's gas off. Home, relating them. Oh, with Derek McMahon's here in the ship. Here, they got home and see in the lock. Then, that, and it's in the ship's hips, so see, it's in the seat of his couches. It's not to look around today.
See, it's happening, he's not there, and he's not there, and he's not there, and he's not there, and he's there, and he's looking on it, and now it's there for the flu, he's up, well, hush, he had it, says the sand, and she'll get anything here, and his name's with sister, and carry, he had no real, and she has been snapped looking on it, he was, see, up some stiff in a boy, it's no, now, for his, you know, let me be, it's a big move, well, hush, she up, says he, here he's not, she up, and you'll have it, if he's good, well, but if it had been the flu, says she up, so you know, since she had it, the owl has surfs, it's all so, you know, yeah, he's fitting his nuts, this. The sheriff's in and the sheriff's in, get on there and shine it. Sign then the sheriff's in, I'll be smart. Go, let's get on there and the sheriff's in, you want. You know, it's sheriff's in, it's in.
Radio Free Long Island.
Strange stuff, huh?
All night. Kraftwerk.
Kraftwerk,
from the Autobahn.
Right now we're listening to something called Midnight. Or as I say...
At the Oasis?
As I say over there...
Midnight at the Oasis.
In Germany they call it Mitternacht. And we heard the Cometen Melody 1 and 2, which is Comet Melody 1 and 2.
And from NASA, we heard the Space Shuttle Transportation System for the Future... and History of the Space Shuttle, as well as...
What's that last one we heard?
Shuttle Space V of History.
I like that one. That was informative.
Sounds like Sino 78.
We got a dandy coming up. This next track is called Morgan's Spezia Gang. Do you know what that means?
Let's switch over for a live report and say goodbye.
Well, are you going to guess what that means?
No. Nine. I'm not going to guess.
Oh, boy. Well, it means morning walk, ladies and gentlemen, and that's appropriate for now, and I'd like to go for a morning walk. Oh, are we going to do that next week, or you, me, and Frank all go for a bicycle ride after our show?
Sounds good to me.
Hey, that'd be great, and watch the sunrise in some part of Long Island.
Sure.
Well, folks, it's been fun. You've been listening to Radio Free Long Island for the last 3 hours. At least we hope so. somebody has to be out there listening.
Every Friday night at midnight.
Every Friday night, right. We do all sorts of weird and crazy things. We talk to people all over the country, all over the world. We talk to ourselves sometimes. We play with machines.
Yep.
And things like that, and have strange sound effects in the background.
We're getting another feed over from Florida.
Oh, from Cape Carnival?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'm going to try the space shuttle one more time.
Well, it's been a real pleasure and a privilege.
As usual, I'm Eric Corley. And
I'm Mike Uhas.
Mike Uhas.
I'll be back Monday night at midnight.
And I'll be back Tuesday night at 9. On Radio Free Long Island.
WUSB, Stony Brook.
Thank you.
Well, Bob, I'm at my wit's end here.
Well, me too, Steve.
Okay.
Why don't we just continue the countdown? Where are we at now?
It's, we're at about 30 seconds now and counting. It's, we're going to do it this time. I don't care what gets in the way. Let's just get the damn thing up in the sky, for God's sake. We're the laughing stock of the world.
Check.
We're the laughing stock of the whole damn world. The Russians are over there.
Rubber band.
Check. It's embarrassing. It really is. We've got $5 budget. $5 is left over from this entire mission.
T-minus 10 seconds and counting.
I better get on the thing and count.
Five, four, three, two, wait, hold on,
stop, freeze, wait, can we start over?
Start over?
Yeah.
From where?
Freeze?
From where?
I'm the one who's counting, that went out over the entire thing. Okay, I'm the one counting, I'm the one paid the extra 10 cents per hour to be on the announcer.
Sorry, I didn't.
You can't do that.
Union rules, right?
Well, that's, okay. We'll like it by this time. No, we'll start the counting from 20. Wait, I better tell the people that. attention, this is Cape Carnival Control. This is Cape Carnival Control. We have frozen the countdown at 20 seconds. We will start it again momentarily. Please hold on. We'll get right back to you.
Will you please shut up? We're talking Cape Cod.
There
was a
television.
Cable
news network is out there. Everyone is out there watching. We're the only two people in charge.
Who is this guy who ordered the pizza with the anchovies and the fried rice?
I don't care about pizza. We're talking about a space shuttle. We're trying to get the thing up to the damn sky. Do you understand that?
What's the countdown at now?
Good God. It's at 20 seconds. We froze it at 20 seconds.
Okay, let's go. Let's do it.
Okay. Attention, ladies and gentlemen, the countdown is now underway again. 15 seconds and counting. I wish that didn't happen. Why? Okay. Oh. 10, 9,
8.
I was supposed to say that. Don't you understand? It's my job to do the announcing, not your job.
Okay,
I'm leaving. Okay, go ahead, leave. I can handle your job.
I don't take full responsibility for the space shuttle yourself.
Okay.
Goodbye.
I don't care. Hey, don't do that. Okay, I really don't care anymore. Let me open the door here. I can handle all this equipment myself if I have to. It doesn't make a difference to me.
Bye.
Okay.
Nice working with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Cape Carnival Control. Ready for liftoff? 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2,